He died and rose. Page 44. For our sake, he was crucified under Pontius Pilate, suffered, died, and was buried. Okay, pass these out afterward, okay? Pass these out. Yeah. 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 Afterwards, you know, they're going to. How can one express the mystery of the Incarnation in a few words on number 75 on page 45? One can express it in this way. Jesus is true God and true man. We notice that the expression Mother of God perfectly sums up these truths. In fact, if Mary is Mother of God, this shows that Jesus is true God. Mary is Mother of God. This shows that Jesus is truly man. Otherwise, Mary could not be his true mother. Next question. How did Jesus save us? Jesus saved us through the paschal mystery of his passion and death on the cross, his resurrection from the dead, and his ascension into heaven. In what sense did his death on the cross save us? This is a profound mystery, but great theologians of the past have explained it in this way. Since sin is an offense against God, who is an infinite being, every sin has an infinite dimension. Thus, there is need of expiation or redemption of infinite value in order to make up for it. No merely human person, no matter how holy, could offer this reparation. Only Jesus, true God and true man, was able to offer the Father infinite reparation in our place, to pay back the infinite offense of sin. The sacrifice of Jesus on the cross is made present on the altar every time Holy Mass is celebrated. Was it necessary for Jesus to suffer that much? No. In itself, it was not necessary, because even the smallest of his sufferings, since it was the suffering of the divine person, had an infinite value. Okay, so Jesus were to pick up a little splinter in the carpenter shop, or pick up one nail, that would have been enough to save the whole universe a million times. Even doing the smallest action. Why? Because it's God doing this action. If he were to just breathe once, that would have been enough to save the whole universe. Or just lift up his hand like this would have been enough to save the whole universe. Now that there's the question is, then why did he go through all this? You know, his scourging, the crowning with thorns, the nailing of his hands, the nailing of his feet, the pierced side, the suffocation of the cross, the insults. I was talking to my mother on the cross, she's reading a mystic that said that when Jesus was there at night, they actually spat in his mouth so much that he could barely breathe. They spat so much. Imagine like 50 people spitting in your mouth, having so much spit that you can barely even swallow. I mean, that's one of the mystics, no? Why that? For two reasons. Show us how much he loves us. Yep. How much he really loves us. And how much he wants us to love him back. There's tons of definitions I could give you for sin. One definition is sin is hurting the one you love. We don't want to be hurting the one we love. That person is Christ. So sin is not simply, it's not simply breaking a law, it's breaking the heart of God. Better definition, yeah. It's like more personal, right? Breaking a law is very legalistic, as the lawyers would tell you, right? Very legalistic. I'm trying to give you an impersonalistic interpretation. Breaking the heart of God. If we see it that way, when we're tempted to sin, we're going to be able to resist better. We don't want to hurt God. He loved us so much. But we're reading now, and this is basically Thomas Aquinas, even the smallest action of Jesus Christ, who's both God and man, would have been enough to save the whole universe a million times over. So Jesus just picking up the nail in the carpenter's shop. Or just blinking once. Or just breathing with his human lungs once, enough to save the whole universe. But he suffered the most difficult death. Being nailed to the cross, not a joke. What were the physical causes of his death? Three. Exhaustion, loss of blood, and also suffocation. You know what suffocation means? What does suffocation mean? Okay, lungs, we have to be inhaling and exhaling, right? We have to inhale means we're bringing air into our lungs. Exhaling means we're expelling. So Jesus was hanging on the cross, and to be able to breathe, what did he have to do? He had to push himself up, get the air in, and then his body would go down with the nails in his hands. And I was once talking with a doctor, and this doctor said one of the most difficult ways to die is when you can't breathe. When I was your age, I was when I was 12, I swam my first mile when I was 12, so I was a pretty good swimmer, as well as playing baseball. No? And I could... At 13 or 14, I could swim underwater for about 30 yards. Which is pretty good, no? Any of you guys know how to swim? Imagine swimming underwater for 30 yards. I was able to, had good lungs, a good athlete, no? When I popped my head out of the water, man, that air was sweet. Ah, man. That was sweet, that air. What would happen if you don't make it to the top of the water? Scary, huh? Kind of scary, right? Not being able to make it, not being able to breathe. So that was part of the suffering of Christ. Some of you maybe saw the film The Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson. Any of you see it? What do you think about it? It's kind of hard to watch when they're scourging him, right? They take off his clothes and they're hitting him with, remember that? First with sticks, then the Roman flagellum. You know what the Roman flagellum is? It's like a baseball, you know what a baseball is, right? With spikes coming out of it, like these big nails coming out and lashing it at Jesus and then actually pulling his flesh out. It's not a joke, is it? Imagine how much he suffered that. He suffered that because he wants you to. He wants you to go to heaven, and you too. All of us, no? So one day, I hope. When you get older, or as soon as you want, I'm reading the life of this boy. He became a saint. He was only 14 years old. His name is Dominic Savio. Maybe you heard of Dominic Savio. There's a parish in Bellflower, Domingo Savio. He died when he was only 14, about your age. He became a saint quick. He said death rather than sin. One day we're going to have to, in growing in our faith goes beyond rules, and our faith is a personal and deep friendship with Jesus Christ. That's what we have to arrive at. I think it's hard to fall in love with rules, but falling in love with a person is much easier. What do you think? Falling in love with a rule book, I think that's pretty hard. Falling in love with a person like Jesus and Mary, that's much easier, right? Because they're persons that really love us. That's what we're aiming at. So I told you a couple months ago, try to talk with Jesus every night before you go to bed. Got a friend, you got to talk to your friend. Spend some time, shoot the breeze, huh? How are things going, huh? Well, Jesus has to be your best friend, you got to talk to him. No way you can cultivate a friendship if you're not talking with your friend. One of the most common cliches you hear today is, I don't have time. I don't have time. Now, there's a group that used to sing, hello, goodbye, hello, goodbye. I don't know why you say hello, I say goodbye. You say yes, I say no. You say go, and I say no, no, no. You say hello, and I say goodbye. The Beatles, 1964, Paul McCartney. You know, Paul, I think that that has a good message. What do you think? I mean, I'm a little bit older than your times, more or less. But that was sung when I was probably about their age, no? And basically the message that the Beatles are saying, hey, there's no time. And I think sometimes we can apply that to God. I don't have time for God. But you know, it's a matter of priorities. You've got time to use your telephone. You've got time to maybe watch TV. You've got time to maybe play sports. No? Or watch sports. It's a matter of what is our priority? What is our priority? What's most important in life for you? That's the big question. You know, we don't have much time. This class is going to go by like that. 2 weeks, you're not going to have class. It's going to be Ash Wednesday. Then it's going to be Easter. Then you're going to have this break. Before you know it, it's already over. And then, you know, before you know it, you're into the second year. You're confirmed. And then you're 15 and you're confirmed. Is that the end of your religion once you're 15? Ah, I'm confirmed. I no longer have to go to confirmation class. I don't have to go to church anymore. I'm a free man. Huh? Remember once going out with a priest to a restaurant and there was this waitress, maybe 28 years old. There were four of us. Are you guys priests? Yeah. And I asked, are you a Catholic? Yeah. Are you confirmed? Yeah. When were you confirmed? 10 years ago. Saying, when was the last time you went to church? When I was confirmed. Oh, boy. Something wrong with that? It's like confirmation was graduating from high school. That was the end of her Catholic religion, huh? Could be the other way around. Right, Max? You're confirmed. You should be on fire. You should really want to... You want to grow in your faith. So Paul, what I'm thinking, as soon as these kids, they make their confirmation, the other kids, they give the exercise of the kids that they did last year, right? They can keep up. They can persevere, right? So our Catholic faith It's not simply rules, but it's following a person that loves us, and we want to love him. His name is Jesus Christ. Amen? Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the cross. Okay, number 78 says, was it necessary for Jesus to suffer that much? No, in itself, it was not necessary because even the smallest of his sufferings, since it was the suffering of a divine person, had an infinite value. But Jesus wanted to suffer the whole passion and the cruel death of the cross to help us understand the evil of sin. The immensity of his love for us. Those are the two things. The evil of sin and how much he loved us. Those are the two basic reasons for his death on the cross. Sin is evil. But even more so, that he loves us. Is that clear? Okay, let's turn the page. What does it mean to say that Jesus died? Say that Jesus died means the same as it would mean for any man. That the soul separated from the body. Paul, that's a great definition I give in my talks. How would you define death? Max? The separation of the soul from the body, right? You like that definition? I thought you would. This is a good one. So when the soul leaves the body, that person is dead. So Jesus' soul left his body and his body died. What's going to happen though? What's going to happen to his body? I mean, he died. What? What's the word? The resurrection. What's that mean? When? A week afterward? Two weeks later? When? What day did he die? What time? If you're in his son, right? Good Friday. Okay, what happened after that? They take him down from the cross? They take the nails out? Out of his hands? Out of his feet? Where did they lower him? Use your imagination. Though. You just threw him on the ground. Where did he end up? You're missing one of the most important parts of the Passion. Where did he end up? Mary's arms. Didn't you know that? You just throw him on the ground. He ends up in Mary's arms. Did you ever hear of Michelangelo, any of you?
Yes.
Did you ever see the Pietà? Have you seen the Pietà? What's the Pietà? Any of you know? What's a Pietà? Go ahead. Oh, the Pietà, Michelangelo, was a sculptor and an artist, and he made the picture, the artistic depiction of Jesus coming down from the cross and ending up in the arms of Mary. And if you go to the Church of St. Peter in Rome, close where the Pope lives, behind glass you're going to see that artistic depiction of Jesus descending in the arms of Mary, and you can see it behind glass. When I went to Rome many years ago to study to become a priest, it was not behind a glass. You could actually see it, almost touch it.
Is it bigger than my son?
It's huge, yes. You know what happened though? About 1983. A crazy guy went and he took a hammer and smashed the face of Mary. I think it was the devil. And then, thanks be to God, they were able to restore the face of Mary, but he actually pounded the face of Mary with a hammer. Hammer blast. I don't know. It was a miracle, the fact that they were able to restore it, because it was marble And you know, marble, you hit with a hammer, it's going to shatter. Probably one time, and they probably grabbed on the guy and they dragged him off to throw him in jail. But now, it's behind glass. Any of you ever go to Mexico? Any of you ever visit Our Lady of Guadalupe, the big church? Any of you ever see Our Lady of Guadalupe? About 100 years ago, there was a man that went to church with a bouquet of flowers, put it in front, and in the flowers was a bomb. And the bomb exploded. And nothing happened to the image. But there was a metal cross next to it that was bent over backwards. And it was almost as if there was an earthquake shaking the whole building. And nothing happened to the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. That was a miracle, because the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe was the tilma of Juan Diego. And the tilma was from cactus, you know, something very... cactus fiber, very, very delicate, right? It's another proof for the miracle of Our Lady of Guadalupe. That should have been just blown to pieces. No? What I see is that the devil hates Mary, because the devil knows that if we love Mary, then we're going to get to heaven. Right? And the devil hates Mary. So you guys love Mary, the devil hates that, because he knows that Mary's going to help you guys to get to heaven. So we start the class praying the rosary, right? A lot of temptation not to pray. Well, the devil wants to distract you. You got to love Mary. Love Mary a lot. I think last Saturday, I think it was your mother and your mother and your father went to the Mass to consecrate. There was about 600 people there consecrating themselves to Mary. Beautiful Mass, giving herself to Mary. Mary's going to help us to get to heaven. Right, Max? Colby, right? Okay, however, since the human nature of Jesus united to the divinity, one might ask what happened to the body and soul of Jesus after death. The answer is that his soul and body, though they were separated from each other, remained united to his divinity. The body of Jesus united to the eternal Word was placed in the tomb, and the soul of Jesus united to the eternal Word descended to the lower regions, to free souls of the just of the Old Testament. And he rose again on the third day in accordance with Scriptures. So what does it mean to say that Jesus rose from the dead? Means that Jesus' soul was reunited with his body. This is page 48. Page 48. However, after the resurrection, Jesus' body would have new properties in addition to those he had before his death on the cross. Before his death, his body was passible, able to suffer and mortal. After his resurrection, his body would be glorious and passable and immortal. So, after Jesus rose from the dead, number one, he's never going to die again. Number two, he's no longer going to suffer. Number three is that he could walk through a wall like a ghost, go right through it. And also, Jesus... try to do this exercise now. Try to imagine right now you're in China with your thought. So Jesus would be able to travel quicker than your thought. Wow, pretty fast, huh? You think about China, that's the other part of the world, right? So Jesus would be able to, he's quicker than your thought process. That's almost unthinkable, isn't it? Another is luminosity, that his body would be like light. So these are the properties of the risen Christ. No longer suffering, no longer death, being able to travel faster than light, being able to go through walls, luminosity like a star, beauty of a star. And your body's going to be like that once you get to heaven at the end of the world. But if you die right now, you go to heaven, you're only going to be going in your soul. Did you know that? Your soul will go to heaven and your body is going to be united to your soul at the end of the world. There are only two people in heaven in body and soul. Who are they? Jesus through the ascension and Mary through the assumption. Just two. How do we know that Jesus rose from the dead? You know that Jesus rose from the dead because the tomb where his body had been laid was found empty. Another proof is that the risen Jesus appeared first to the women and then repeatedly to the apostles who at first doubted, as the Gospels clearly tell us. The resurrection of Jesus is both an historical fact and a mystery of faith. As an historical fact, it is a miracle which proves the truth of our faith. As a mystery, it introduces us to God's plan, in which the risen Jesus was the firstborn of the new world, of that world to come, which we mention at the end of the creed. Is the resurrection of Jesus an important event? What do you think? Yes. The resurrection is an event of prime importance, so much that the apostle, St. Paul, even says that if Christ was not raised, vain then is our preaching, vain too is your faith. Why do we say in fulfillment of the scriptures? Catechism of the Catholic Church explains, Christ's resurrection is the fulfillment of the promises both of the Old Testament and of Jesus himself during his earthly life. The phrase, in accordance with the scriptures, indicates that Christ's resurrection fulfilled these predictions. Once a class, an English class of eighth graders, and the teacher said, I want you to write a very important essay on the most important living person that you admire. This is about, say, about 15 years ago. One boy wrote an article on Michael Jordan. You ever hear of Michael Jordan, any of you? Who was Michael Jordan? Was he lousy or was he good? You think that he was almost the best? They called him Air Jordan. You ever see him? Maybe some clips. He's not the tallest, but the most gracious athlete I've ever seen. Another boy wrote an article on Michael Jackson. You ever hear of Michael Jackson? Who's Michael Jackson? Well, he was a dancer as well as a singer, right? You know, when I was a kid, it was a Jackson 5. He started singing when he was about 8 or 9 years old. And his whole family, you know? And another boy, he wrote an article on Jesus Christ. And the teacher took him aside. You never do that again. I told you to write an essay only on someone who's living. The little boy said, Jesus rose from the dead. Hallelujah. Is Jesus alive? Was the boy wrong? Was he right? Did he have a lot of courage? Yeah. Had a lot of courage, right? Yeah, Jesus is not dead. The boy was right. I love that story. Jesus is still alive. Do you believe it? And St. Paul says, if Jesus did not he's not risen from the dead, our faith is in vain. Let's eat, drink, and be merry. Let's live it up. It's Miller time. Let's go for it. Hey, there's a casino over there, right? There's nothing beyond the grave. We're going to be like a dead dog. There's nothing beyond the grave. The other day, I was driving toward Pioneer, and I saw, you know what a possum is? Yeah, a dead possum. I think one of the most ugly animals I've ever seen. No? Aren't they ugly? No. No? Okay, well, to each his own, right? I think a cat is a much more attractive animal than a possum. I think any of you would like to pet a possum, right? I think it's effective original sin, right, Paul? So the point is that Jesus is not dead, he is risen. When do we celebrate the resurrection of Christ? At Christmas, right? But one of the most important days, is on Christmas we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus? President's Day? No. 4th of July.
No.
4th of July, right? Oh, Thanksgiving Day, right?
No.
When? Easter. Right? La Pascua, right? Easter. Easter when we celebrate. And what are we going to be entering into exactly 2 weeks from today? Ash Wednesday. 2 weeks from today, Ash Wednesday, we enter into what's called Lent, which is a 50-day preparation for what? For Easter. Yeah. 40-day preparation for Easter. Okay, so we've read this. I think, Paul, we're ready to pass out the worksheets, okay? Pass out the worksheets. Passing out the worksheets, and the first question will be, how can one express the mystery of the incarnation in a few words? How can one express the mystery of the incarnation in a few words? What is the difference between incarnation and reincarnation? You ever hear the word reincarnation? What is reincarnation? You die and then you come back to a new life, right? So you die, you come back. If you lived a bad life, you come back maybe as an animal. If you lived a good life, you come back as maybe a king or a queen. Do you believe in reincarnation? Do you believe in reincarnation? Are you a Buddhist? Are you a Buddhist? I'm glad you're not. We don't believe in that. We believe we're born, we live, we die, we're judged, we go up or we go down. It's as simple as that. We're born, we live, we die, we're judged by Jesus Christ. We either go up or down. Like an elevator. Okay, make sure you hit the right arrow, huh? Either the arrow goes up or the arrow goes down. We want to make sure that we're always hitting the right arrow, right? Hitting the right arrow every time you're saying your prayers, you're going to Mass, receiving communion. Okay? Okay, you both have a sheet? Okay. Move apart, okay? Let's move over one. Okay. Okay, so the question is this. How can one express the mystery of the incarnation in a few words? One can express it in this way. Jesus is true God and what? True man. Jesus is true God and true man. And we notice that the expression Mother of God perfectly sums up these truths. In fact, Mary is Mother of God. This shows that Jesus is true God. Mary is the Mother of God. This shows that Jesus is truly man. So he's true God and true man. Otherwise, Mary could not be his true mother. How did Jesus save us? Okay, we're going to have four fill-ins in this short sentence. Jesus saved us by his passion, which means his suffering, and passion and death on the cross. His passion and death on the cross. His resurrection. Okay, so Jesus rose from the dead. Okay, what happened 40 days after Jesus rose from the dead? 40 days after he rose from the dead, what happened? What is that called? Okay, it's called his ascension. Ascension. The verb to ascend means to go up. To descend means to go down. A little bit of vocabulary, okay? So he went up to heaven by his own power. So he rose and he was appearing 40 days to various people, and then after 40 days, he went up to heaven, where he sits at the right hand of God the Father. From there he shall come to judge the living and the dead. The creed. Number three. What sense did his death on the cross save us? This is a profound mystery. But great theologians of the past have explained it this way. Since sin is an offense against who? God, who is an infinite being, every sin has an infinite dimension. Thus, there was need of expiation or redemption of infinite value in order to make up for it. No merely human person, no matter how holy, could offer this reparation. Only Jesus, true God and true man, was able to offer the Father infinite reparation in our place to pay back the infinite offense of sin. The sacrifice of Jesus on the cross is made present on the altar every time Holy Mass is celebrated. So every time the priest lifts up the host and the chalice, it's invisible, but Jesus is present there on the cross, offering himself to God the Father for our salvation. It's invisible, but it's real. I lift up the host and the chalice, Jesus becomes present, begging God the Father for your salvation. It's important. Four, was it necessary for Jesus to suffer that much? No. In itself, this was not necessary because even the smallest of his sufferings, since it was the suffering of a divine person, had an infinite... What? Value. Okay. But Jesus wanted to suffer the whole passion and the cruel death on the cross to help us understand the evil of sin and immensity of his love for us. Evil of sin, but the great love he had for each and every one of us. Next. What did it mean to say that Jesus died? To say that Jesus died means that the same as it would mean for any man that the soul separated from the body. However, since the human nature of Jesus is united to the divinity, one might ask, what happened to the body and soul of Jesus after death? The answer is that his soul and body, though they were separated from each other, remained united. United to his divinity. The body of Jesus, united to the eternal Word, was placed in the tomb And the soul of Jesus, united to the eternal word, descended to the lower regions to free the souls of the just of the Old Testament. So until Jesus suffered, died, and rose from the dead, no one could go to heaven. Did you know that? No one could go to heaven until Jesus suffered, died, and rose from the dead. The gates of heaven were closed. So him suffering, dying, and rising opened up the gates of heaven. We can be saved. We can go to heaven. That's how important that is. We're to be really thankful for what he did for us. So all of us can go to heaven if we want to. Hopefully we want to. What does it mean to say that Jesus rose from the dead? This means that Jesus' soul was reunited with his body. However, after the resurrection, Jesus' body would have new properties in addition to those he had had before his death on the cross. Before his death, his body was passible, able to suffer, and mortal. After his resurrection, his body would be glorious. His body would be glorious, impassible, and immortal. How do we know that Jesus rose from the dead? We know that Jesus rose from the dead because the tomb where his body had been laid was found empty. Another proof is that the risen Jesus appeared first to the women, then repeatedly to the apostles, who also at first doubted, as the gospel clearly tells us. This is not written. Who did Jesus first appear to when he rose from the dead? You know? Who did he first appear to you? You're a scholar in disguise. Who would it be? Mary Magdalene? Mary who? His mother? You're right. You're right. Not bad. It's not written in the Bible, but the Catholic Church believes the first one he appeared to would be his blessed mother. But she was the only one that didn't doubt. The others were doubting. You know, Jesus died on the cross. Why did that happen? No? They were really confused and sad and depressed. Whereas Mary suffered a lot, but she knew that he was going to rise from the dead. She had that hope of the resurrection. She was the only one. So Jesus appeared to her. Exactly how it was, we don't know. But St. Ignatius and the saints say we should try to imagine the way it must have been. The joy that Mary must have experienced in seeing Jesus rise from the dead. Another proof is that he appeared first to, okay, the resurrection of Jesus is both an historical fact and a mystery of faith. As an historical fact, it is a miracle. Name another miracle. What was the first miracle that Jesus did that we have in the Bible? Wedding in Cana? What happened there? Turned what? Water into wine. That was the first. Can you name another miracle? Okay, Lazarus, right? Today, if you go to Mass in the evening, you're going to have another miracle. There was this blind guy, and Jesus healed this blind guy. He put mud on his eyes, right? And then he was able to see partially. Then he had to go and wash his eyes the second time, and he was able to see clearly. Why did Jesus do miracles? Do you know why? I didn't know. I thought you didn't know, so I'll tell you. Okay. He did miracles to prove that he was God. Because the people were doubting, he said, if you don't believe my words, at least believe my actions. So he did miracles to prove that he was really God. Okay, next. As a mystery, it introduces us to God's plan in which the risen Jesus was the firstborn of the new world, of that world to come, which we mentioned at the end of the Creed. Is the resurrection of Jesus an important event? What do you think? Was it important? Okay, the resurrection of Jesus is an event of prime importance. So much so that the Apostle St. Paul says that if Christ was not raised, vain. What does that mean, vain? Useless, right? Useless would be a synonym. Vain, then, is our preaching. Then, what? Vain, too, is your faith. Why do we say in fulfillment of Scriptures? The Catechism of the Catholic Church explains Christ's resurrection is the what? Fulfillment of the promises both of the Old Testament and of Jesus himself during his earthly life. The phrase, in accordance with the Scriptures, indicates that Christ's resurrection fulfilled these predictions. Okay, time for one saint. Go to page 90. Page 90. We're going to do, we'll jump out to 93. We only have time for one. St. Francis, 93. The earliest information we have of St. Francis' young life is found in the Fonti Francescani. There lived in Assisi a man by the name of Francis, who from his earliest years was educated by his parents according to the vanities of the world. At 20, Francis fought in the war between Assisi and Perugia. He was captured and thrown into prison, where he remained for almost a year. During that time, he became gravely ill and nearly died. This gave rise to the difficult path of his conversion. One day, while walking down the street, he came upon a leper who was begging. Who's a leper? Can anyone tell me what a leper looks like? What? So the leper has these spots or ulcers all over his body, right? It's an incurable disease, kind of like AIDS today. These spots all over his body, they'd have to live in leper colonies, they'd have to cry out impure if anyone came close. They're basically rotting alive. Okay? So he comes across this beggar who is begging. Francis stopped and looked at the sick man's wounds with horror. He wanted to run away from this man whose flesh was rotting. But suddenly, he remembered a promise he had made to the Lord while he was in prison, to become a knight of Christ if he ever got out alive. He got off the horse and gave the poor man some money. Immediately, the thought of Christ's passion, of Jesus nailed to the cross, came to his mind, moved to tears. He recognized the Lord in the leper and embraced him. A difficult period now began for Francis. He visited lepers, gave away his possessions to the beggars he met, and retired to pray in isolated places. One day, he entered the nearly ruined church of San Damiano, knelt before the crucifix, imploring a sign showing him what he should do. In the silence of the shadows, he heard a loud voice which said three times, "Francis, go and repair my house, which, as you see, is in ruins." The saint did not immediately understand the real meaning of this message. He thought he was to physically repair the little church. In order to do this, he sold more of his possessions to pay the workers. The episode angered Francis' father, who, exasperated, publicly disowned him, had him banished from the city, and dragged him before the bishop, thinking that the latter, by his religious authority, could force his son to obey him. Francis passed between two rows of silent and curious people. He stripped himself and handed his clothes to his father, saying, "Up till now I called you my Father on earth, but from now on I can say with all certainty, Our Father who art in heaven. Because I have placed all my store in him have I placed all my trust and hope." The bishop, moved by such a witness of faith, covered him with his cloak and embraced him, giving him his blessing. From that moment on, Francis lived in the greatest poverty, and many followed him along his way. Thus, the order The Franciscan order was born, one of the most important and well-known orders in the Church. Our saint was always particularly devoted to the Passion of Christ, and he received the stigmata, a sign of his perfect imitation of the poor crucified Jesus. St. Francis died in Assisi on October 3rd, 1226, and was canonized less than 2 years later on July 15th. Any of you know what the stigmata is? He was praying before a crucifix, and all of a sudden he looked up and he had the wounds of Christ in his hands, the wounds of Christ in his feet, and the wounds of Christ in his side. Because he wanted to suffer for Christ and imitate Christ all the more. What's that? Padre Pio also had it. Padre Pio. Okay, let's say a prayer. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Glory be to the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end.